Good morning. It's Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. If you missed the first part of the show, you're going to miss the later part of the show. Fan 590 on social. That was the beat to roll out. That's a good Convoy song. Not unlike the Convoy of CEBL players who have made it to the NBA over the last week. Cat Barber, Javon Delorier, Xavier Moon, Xavier Sneed, all the Xaviers. Joining us now to help talk about that, what it means for the CEBL, and what it just means for Canadian basketball in general to be graduating these guys to the NBA from a domestic league, is the Commissioner and CEO of the CEBL, Mike Morreale. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, things are, like you said, that's a pretty good lead into to what's been happening in our league. And I'm just so incredibly happy for our players, obviously, that have, you know, done the hard work and heavy lifting to get, to achieve some of their dreams. And, you know, for our basketball ops people, our team presidents, and you know, the people that I get to work with at league office, because it's kind of surreal right now, to be honest with you.
It seems like it. And as a fan of the league and these guys, you know, it's funny. Xavier Moon's a guy. He's a three-time CEBL MVP now. And obviously the introduction to him, if you're a Toronto basketball fan, is that he's Jamario Moon's nephew. But then you watch, and he's been the best player in this league 3 years running. I was actually a little shocked the other year when he was an open tryout invite for the 905 and he didn't crack the roster. You know, they had a bit of a roster crunch that year, so it's maybe not necessarily on him, but I was surprised he didn't make it. And now he's continued this grind. Excellent start with the Agua Caliente Clippers. And then he gets to make his NBA debut, 12 minutes with the Clippers the other night. Focusing on Xavier first, just because he is the three-time MVP, how cool is this for you guys as a league to graduate him to the NBA and have, you know, a broadcast say, hey, this guy came from the CEBL. He's the first one to get in a game and get some minutes.
Yeah, just like I said, it's kind of surreal. And Xavier's the one that for me hits home, because he really is committed every single year that we started playing. You know, we've been in existence for 3 years. He's been part of the CBL for those 3 years. And in each of those years, to your point, he won the MVP and won two back-to-back championships and won the championship game MVP. So he has done it all. And, you know, anybody that played against him, anybody that watched him, certainly knows that he's an exceptional talent and kind of stood out above the rest. And we have some great players, as, you know, evidenced by the people that are moving on to the NBA. So, that one was special because it really clearly defined that the CBL could be a pathway to the NBA. And, the other guys just add the icing on the cake. And I can only imagine, well, I know in some respects what that's done for us in terms of people recognizing who we are, players who want to be part of it, players who realize, hey, I can stay in Canada, I can stay in North America, finish up a G League season, play in the CBL, potentially go back to the G League, to the NBA, or whatever the path may be. The fact that it's been proven to work is really important.
Do you put a little pressure on Xavier? Like, are you texting and be like, hey, man, you're our MVP. You got to show out. Like, the MVP of our league has to look good in these opportunities.
Well, I think, you know, with Xavier, you just let him do his thing. I mean, the guy is a bucket getter, and he can get it anytime he wants. And, if you know, you watch what he's done just before going out to the Clippers and with Agua Caliente, the farm team, you can see how he gets to control the game. And if he wants to score, he can score. If he wants to assist, he can assist. If he wants to play some great defense, he can do it all. And he's a great person. So, you know, a lot of people will look at Xavier Moon and say, he's too small for the NBA. He's, you know, he doesn't have the pedigree. He didn't go to a big school. But he's there and he can play. And I think, you know, I'm really excited about the opportunities he's getting, because I think it's just the beginning for him.
I was joking with his agent, Stacey Leawood, the other day that Xavier is going to be the first player to ever win American Player of the Year in the Canadian League and then win Honorary Canadian Player of the Year in an American League in the G League. Because, at this point, I know it's the CEBL and it's the Canadian Elite League, and a lot of our focus is on how this domestic option can give Canadian players a home and continue to build Canadian talent. But how important is it to the health of the league long term and to the goals you guys have to also be able to attract American talent like an Xavier, like a guy who's on the G League fringe or maybe needs something to fill that gap between the end of the G League season or the end of the Euro season and when NBA training camps really pick up?
Well, I think it's really important, to have a league that's obviously predominantly Canadian because we have enough talent and we can help grow that talent to even higher levels and work with Canada Basketball to make sure we always have a Team Canada senior men's national team ready on the go when the NBA guys aren't available. So a lot of those things are really kind of, the exciting part. And going into this year, we actually want to expand that and open up, a mandatory international position. Because I think that's the next stage of what we're doing. I think there's no doubt that American-born players want to play up here. It makes a lot of sense. It's comfortable to them. How do we open up and expose our brand internationally? And we're doing it now with our Champions League games, which is another surreal moment for me. But also doing it by looking to attract some high-level international players and their fan bases and their national programs, et cetera, to come to Canada and give it a shot as well.
Are you dealing with that as we speak? I mean, we obviously know what's happening with the top highest percentile of player and the opportunities they're getting. But are you dealing with a lot of interest from, outside that maybe wasn't there before with all this movement around the basketball world right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're identifying that, the basketball environment is big and it is full of opportunities. And I think we've created an opportunity that fits very well into the kind of the basketball ecosystem and the time at which people play. And whether you play in the EuroLeague or play in the G League or play in other leagues, generally speaking, when we play in the spring and summer, you're available and it's your opportunity to come and play and be on national television and play against high level players. And, not only have we graduated players in the NBA, which is kind of still crazy to say, we continue to get our players better contracts in subsequent years. So if they come here, they played in a mid-level Turkish league, and they come and play for us in the spring and summer, some of our Canadian kids especially, they can graduate to a higher international league than they have with better contracts. And you can see that maturity really start to grow with our younger guys. And then we're able to attract back the Scrub Brothers and similar players that have had to leave us to go overseas and to watch them play and do a heck of a job and bring that international style of game back to Canada is really, really interesting.
Obviously, we focus a lot on the players that the CEBL is putting in these good positions and helping take the next steps. But that's also been the case on the coaching and even the broadcast side, as we see a guy like Javon Shepherd get more and more opportunities. Obviously, those things go a little hand in hand, but how big a focus is it for the league on helping those coaches and the ancillary people like a broadcast team continue to grow as well?
Yeah, I think that's a major part of what we do, and it's something we definitely work on. So, you'll get Javon, you'll get Amy Audibert, who's doing a fantastic job. Amy is our sideline reporter for the last few years and did the grind like we all did. And then there's assistant coaches or there's members of the support staff or, we've seen guys go to the 905 and the 905 guys, the G League team for the Raps come to us and vice versa. And we're starting to see that with other G League teams and other countries that have national federations. So, that's been really encouraging. It is something that if we lose somebody to better opportunities, whether you're a basketball player, an announcer, a coach, et cetera, that's a good thing. We look at that as something that is positive, that we've done our job. So we don't look at it as we're creating a void, because we believe that the talent level across the board, on and off the court, is there in Canada. And we're happy to give people the opportunity to continue to grow.
We're speaking to Mike Morreale, Commissioner and CEO of the CEBL. Cat Barber, Javon Delorier, Xavier Moon, Xavier Sneed, all in the NBA right now as CEBL alum. Mike, I hate to put you on the spot, and I think I know who you're going to say, but who's next, man? You got four up. There's still a few spots opening up around the league. Who's the next CEBL guy to get the call?
I think it's got to be Lindell. If you look at what Lindell Wigginton's been doing, not just this year, but in previous years out in the G League, he's a bucket getter. And, that makes it difficult sometimes in the NBA because there are true bucket getters on every team. You know, it's funny to say that and think, well, this guy just scores. Well, he hasn't. Yeah, that's his job. But, you know, I think Lindell's been overlooked. And he's certainly got the pedigree, and he's Canadian, and that will be a proud moment, certainly for him and his family, but for us as well. And I think he's days away from the call-up. I hope so. We'll just have to wait and see.
We need some East Coast representation in the league.
You bet.
Also, Lindell has the, you know, maybe Shea plays the Hamilton card with yep. OKC or something like that around the roster turn. We'll see. But the East Coast representation is nice.
Absolutely.
Speaking of East Coast representation, Blake could be a wonderful, wonderful fit as GM of the new Newfoundland Growlers team. Not that we want to lose Blake, but if we were, his East Coast roots, his Newfoundland love, is that something you see in the near future?
Well, I tell you, after this, following this phone call, he knows a lot about what's going on. So I think he's got a leg up.
He's auditioning.
Yeah, he's got a leg up, that's for sure. And the East Coast, man, that's a place that lots of people want to go. So, yeah, give me a talk.
Yeah, wow. I will. My dad's excited to so my dad lives just a short boat ride away from St. John's. And I've got some family in around St. John's and Mount Pearl, and they're all asking lots of questions about it and when it's going to come and everything, and if Carl English will be involved. So lots of fun there. It's great to see the growth of the league, both in terms of, you know, getting that 10th franchise out on the East Coast and seeing guys like Xavier Moon and Kat and everyone graduate to the NBA through the CBL. It's establishing itself as a very important part of not just Canadian basketball, but the North American developmental system. Mike Morreale, CBL commissioner and CEO, thanks so much for making the time this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I really do appreciate it, and Happy New Year to all of you.
Hey, you too, Mike. Thank you. Ailish, you're right. CEBL does not come. I got to be very intentional about it because it just sounded like
right.
I said CBL. Like, yeah, it's like I'm used to saying WWE is one that doesn't come off the tongue very easily either. And I've gotten used to it. So I just got to find my way around that.
To be fair to you, Blake, I believe Mike had a CBL in there as well. So yeah. I think it's a widespread issue.
CEBL. Got to break up that C and E. Very cool to see these guys, Xavier Moon and Cat Barber, especially because they've actually gotten on the floor. So strongly recommend as the next season rolls around in the spring, people continue to check out the CEBL, either locally or most of the games are streamed for free. You can see a lot of Canadian talent and apparently now future NBA talent.
So give me like a quick history lesson on the Newfoundland Growlers. Have they started yet? How do I become a fan? When do they begin? And are they really like they're the same Growlers that the ECHL team is?
Yes. So they're going to use, I believe they're even going to use the same logo.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yes. So they will be the 10th franchise. They're going to play at the Fieldhouse at MUN, Memorial University of Newfoundland. Cool. That'll begin in the 2022 season if everything goes as planned. So obviously there's some question around, you know, what does this all look like if COVID is still a major factor. The CEBL has done a bubbled season before already and pulled that off effectively. But yeah, if all goes well, so it's the same group that owns Mile One Center, I believe. Anyway,
okay.
that will mean nothing to anyone. So, yeah, they founded this new team. There was the St. John's Edge of the NBL, but there's always a lot of drama around arenas and teams and stuff like that out there. But there is a basketball audience out there. They are still owed a Raptors preseason game from LeBron's rookie year when it got canceled because the floor was too slippery. So maybe the Newfoundland Growlers are our next step toward finally getting the Raptors back out there for an exhibition. Once the Raptors are back to doing their training camps around Canada.
My one big regret after covering the Maple Leafs at their training camp in Newfoundland, I believe in 2019 when it was not getting Newfoundland Growlers gear.
Yes.
And now my regret is even deeper because I would have had an advanced copy of you know, the future CEBL team, the Newfoundland Growlers. So I would have been way ahead of the curve here. I could have had on right now talking to Mike. It would have been perfect. But
I'll go put it on at the break.
My brother was out east, and he actually picked me up a shirt when he was out there. I don't know, like within the same year that the Growlers were inaugural, I don't know, inductees to the league. So he picked me up one, and it's really cool. I'm glad that he got me one, because I don't think I've seen any of that around. Yeah.
It is a good logo. I do have some questions about the color scheme, maybe, but let's wait to see the jerseys. And I do, one of the favorite jerseys I own, I'm not a huge jersey guy, but I got this for Christmas one year from my dad, who is from Newfoundland. I have one of the St. John's Ice Caps jerseys from when they were the hockey team out there. It's a good looking jersey. It's certainly better than that team was. So maybe there's some, you know, nod to Alex Wong. Maybe there's some Canadian Coachella, way home or whatever jerseys in the mix here. Ailish, we got anything popping on the text line?
Yeah, let me just take a little look. I saw something to do with the Xavier Moon. Here we go. TJ from London. The one thing that you're missing about Xavier Moon is his first shot in Canada
NBL.
Was actually in the NBLC with the London Lightning. And I know because I was there for almost every one of his games in London.
Nice. Yes, he did play
the NBLC.
So the NBL or NBLC, the National Basketball League of Canada, is that runs kind of concurrent to the G League and NBA season. So where CEBL is more of an off-season developmental thing, that's more of an in-season one. The London Lightning have been monstrously successful. I actually went out and spent a couple days with them a couple years ago. They had Royce Young, the former NBA first-round pick, with them at that point. And they were being coached by Kyle Julius, who's he's now overseas, but very, very established and decorated Canadian coach on the international scene. They had an assistant coach who, this is how it all got set up, but he was, when I was at UBC and doing commentary for them, he was their best player. And then he was assistant coaching London. So to that person, I know all about the Lightning.
That's TJ from London.
TJ.
So, and he's got a 519 number, Blake. So he's
London. Yeah.
We were talking earlier about how we were just talking about the World Juniors and the referees. And we had a text in from Jeff from Oakville, who said, "Good morning. As a ref, the only thing you can do is get respect to make the expected correct calls. I agree. The pre-faceoff comments are lame." So that's a ref weighing in on the pre-faceoff comments.
Sorry, what was that person's name?
Jeff from Oakville.
Jeff. Thank you for that. I hope you're also not one of the referees who does like the fake puck drop to try to get a guy to bite and throw him out of the faceoff, because that's another big pet peeve here.
Let's see what else we got here. Slim in Guelph. This is when we are back talking about goalie masks. Ed Belfour's mask worked wherever he went. All he had to do was change the background color.
Yeah, nice. That's a good call. The eagle is, it's a classic, right?
The leather jacket also worked for the eagle.
not too much in the text line. So keep it up, 590, 590. We'll have a couple little breaks throughout the day to take your texts. We're going to do Wake and Rake next. So if you have any bets that you're in on, Ailish needs to pay for a new laptop. So send me in any sure wins, please, so I can pay off the laptop I had to buy because I waterboarded mine.
So
can I just...
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was listening live when you guys came up with the Wake and Rake parlay. Brilliant.
You like
proud
it?
Of you then, proud of you now. That is a brilliant idea for
Thank you.
The communal bed, and of course, a pretty pretty clever tag on it as well.
Yeah, I just hope you're ready. Because we're gonna tag you in here in the next segment.
Yeah, I don't want to drag it down on my first opportunity here, but I think I got a pretty good selection for my my part on the Wake and Rake.
Look, I'll say this: you don't have to worry too much about your success, because for our Wake and Rake picks so far, JD is 1-5, Ailish is 2-2.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
I'm 7-0.
Not good for a parlay.
7-0.
So yeah. Do you have one victory? If JD was one in five.
We actually have two, but it's because Ailish was off a couple days and JD and I hit a two-parter. And then Ailish and I hit our weekend one because JD never sent me in his pick. He was supposed to send it in after the show and he never sent it. So we had a Bucks Friday night plus Thursday night plus Bills money line hit as well.
In our defense, it's been really difficult because we make the picks at 8:30 in the morning and we believe that nothing's going to change, or we try to anticipate it. And then by 4 o'clock, half the roster's out because of COVID, the game's canceled or the line has moved significantly. So just take it with a grain of salt, listeners, that we'll give you this at 8:30, but please resurface your gambling information around 4 or 5 or 6 if you want to stay hot, because it's been, I feel like we should get a little asterisk, you know, on some of those.
Yeah, these are trying times in the gambling world. I like when I'm betting on the NFL, I like getting an early start. So it's been particularly problematic for me, who's getting bets in on about a Monday night or Tuesday morning.
Ooh, wow.
And then it's like the laundry list of COVID. I already have one on the Colts, and now Carson Wentz is on the COVID list and they contacted Philip Rivers. So I wish I could take that one back.
You can't cash out?
For a loss.
Oh,
just ride with it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's this is the thing, because sometimes you jump on the early lines and you get it's a tastier line that way, right? But yeah, keep everything with a grain of salt. Wait for the final injury reports to come down. We're gonna talk some of our picks. We're gonna talk Week 16 in the NFL. We're gonna see if there's any way to bet the World Juniors, or if Canada is like a supercharged version of the Leafs, where you got to get really creative with your bets because they're such heavy favorites all the time. They did not cover last night, by the way. 11-2 victory didn't cover the spread.
Imagine not covering in an 11-2 victory.
That's crazy.
Oh man, we're gonna talk about all of that, especially NFL Week 16, which we haven't touched on yet today, really, because it's Wednesday, but it feels like a Monday. All that's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Good morning. Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Borkar, and filling in for JD today and tomorrow, Justin Cuthbert. You can follow them at Ailish Borkar, at Jason Cuthbert on Twitter. Not even going to try Justin's Instagram handle, but it's his name without vowels. Ailish Borkar there as well. Fan590 on our socials. And then, of course, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate, review, all that nice stuff. And keep the text coming. 590-590. Whatever you want to talk about today. Because we've had a little bit of everything. We've had juniors. We've had hockey masks. We've had a little bit of John Madden memories with his passing yesterday. And then we're going to talk Wake and Rake right now. We're going to talk a little bit of sports gambling. Before we get into NFL this week, I want to ask you guys if you see any point in trying to bet on the World Junior tournaments when it comes to Canada games. I've had some success on the other games. The Canada games, the Canada lines have just been too big for me. I've played the player props game a little bit. But Ailish, are you touching these at all? Are you strictly watching these as a fan?
You know, I didn't for the first little while get into the betting, but last night with it being such a blowout, it was kind of fun to do, you know, who's going to score our next goal. Or I like the live action betting more than trying to predict, because as we said, the spread was ridiculous. Like, I was more doing player props for World Juniors, because that to me is a bit more exciting. Gives you something to cheer for, gives you like a player specifically to watch, especially in those blowout games. So I had Bedard over 1.5 goals, which was good because we got four. I'm like, I should have done a higher one, but that was
no,
good.
You shouldn't have.
No, I shouldn't have. That's good enough. But yeah, just stuff like that keeps it a little bit more interesting for me and a little bit more engaging in a blowout. But that's probably what I'm going to do when it's a game like that. But now they're going to play Germany, Finland. Those should be a little bit more competitive. So I might do more like spread or a little bit of a sprinkle of a parlay.
Yeah, I don't know that there will be a ton of value spread side tonight. Canada is a 6-goal favorite right now against Germany. Germany beat a Czechia team in shootout. that Canada beat 6-3, and that game didn't feel as close as 6-3 necessarily. Once Canada got behind, they kind of picked up steam from there. But where are you on this, Justin? Are you playing the props game? Are you doing what Ailish suggested and what I've seen some suggest on Twitter, which is, hey, feel the first few minutes out, and when the in-game line swings too far, then you jump on it as a course correction kind of approach?
Justin,
I believe you are muted. I believe you're muted in our little system.
Muted. Boo.
You good now?
No.
Okay. So he's not there. So Ailish, we'll talk about this a little bit. So you see a line, a hockey line that is almost the size of a touchdown tonight. And I don't even want you to analyze this game necessarily. I want you to analyze kind of as a hockey viewer and a hockey player. What do you think when you see a line like that? Because obviously a game like the Austria game, like it leads to questions like, hey, do we need to have like a, not a mercy rule, but like the goal differential in that game maxes out at a certain point, so you don't have embarrassing scores. Or, if you're a fan, do you look at this and say, you know what, 6.5, 7.5 is just too big? Like, too many hockey games are closer than you'd expect at this stage. Where are you at just on the large spreads in hockey in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's so completely different than the NHL. Like, just logging in to look at World Junior lines, you're like, holy crap. Like as last night, more than a touchdown. I know it seems like, oh, these games, what is the point? Are we really... like, do you feel bad for Austria, for example? But you think of it, it's their best players. They're getting an opportunity to showcase themselves. There are some potential NHL talent on those teams. So you definitely, as a fan, feel like, ooh, it's tough to watch these players rack up goals. But at the same time, like, that's kind of how these teams in these countries develop. I've seen it in the women's side, especially, where, you know, Canada and US are going to crush most teams, but you're going to watch a Finland start to be competitive over 3 or 4 years of these tournaments. So it is an opportunity for these younger developing nations countrywise to get a chance to see what the best is all about. So when you look at a spread like that, like as a bettor, you kind of, oh, well, you know, that's tough. But as a hockey fan, you see the value of these teams playing in these tournaments and being able to develop, because in maybe 3 or 4 years, like we saw Switzerland for women, and like start to have more of a competitive showing after 3 years of being like in the lower division. So I think it's tough. I'm on both sides of the argument there. You don't want to see a team get smashed 11-2, but you hope that in a couple of years they learn and they develop and this leads to something greater.
In the immortal words of DeMar DeRozan, the only way through it is through it. You got to take those lumps at a certain point. So Ailish, big expected week and weekend for Canada hockey in the World Juniors. 17 to 5 goal differential, mm-hmm. If my math is escaping me. But a big weekend also for your Buffalo Bills. The Bills beat the Patriots 33-21. It's their second win in a row. Moves them to 9-6. Pushes them right now to the top of the division, tied with New England record-wise. So a little bit of room for nonsense down the stretch here. But your Bills are looking better. Like, that was certainly a much, much, much better game than their first meeting with the Patriots, especially when it comes to the Josh Allen aspect. And now they play two teams these last 2 weeks who are a combined 11-19, both under 500. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it can't be understated, honestly, how important that game was. I can't think of something in recent history that is, like, I just can't think of a game that was really that big regular season wise. So for them to come out and to win, you know, in New England was obviously a huge momentum builder, and their odds of winning the division were zero if they were to lose that. So the pressure, the moment to be able to grasp that and dominate and come out with a, you know, a powerful win was big. We saw Josh Allen put the team on his back, but we saw a lot of other guys show up too, which is important because it had kind of been a discussion of, is Josh Allen just going to, you know, put the team on his shoulders and drag them across the finish line? But he felt a little bit more supported that game. The conversation leading into it, we talked about who's the game bigger for, Josh Allen or Mac Jones? And I was not that impressed by Mac Jones. Obviously, I'm biased, but I definitely felt like Josh Allen came out as the hero of that game. And when you look at Bill's Twitter, they can be just as up and down as like Raptors Twitter, for example, where they like to get really down on Josh Allen if he doesn't have a good game, or the whole team in general. And obviously the run defense needs a little bit of help still, but I feel positive about it. I obviously bet on the Bills and was happy about that. I did a little bit of a parlay with them, the over team points and a Singletary touchdown, and I was like biting my nails at the end because he got like one of the final touchdowns there. And I'm like, come on, man, like you're going to make my parlay hit. And he did. So a good betting weekend for me. I didn't touch too many other football games. I think I bet the Bears actually well. They were super behind. It was plus 800. And I was like, they're going to come back. And this is me being like a bit of a degenerate. I like to like, I'm all about the in-game betting though. The plus 800 line, I bet on that. They finally came back a one. So I did all right on NFL this weekend.
So in terms of your Bills, obviously monster Josh Allen game. Like you said, outperformed Mac Jones. The rushing defense, still a bit of a question. The Patriots didn't have Ramondre Stevenson. Damian Harris popped over 5 yards a carry. And then on the other side, Devin Singletary and Zach Moss really couldn't get anything going again. I have to think that's because Devin Singletary didn't come on the show last week.
that's and, why.
And he was in his own head about it. Isaiah McKenzie comes out of nowhere as a number two option for Josh Allen. I guess, so we had talked a lot about how the AFC kind of shakes up as a bit of a rock, paper, scissors, right? Where matchup-wise, you like the Patriots against the Bills. Maybe you like the Bills against the Chiefs, but you like the Chiefs against the Patriots, and all it shakes out. You know, you can throw Tennessee or Indianapolis in there. You know, I think if I'm Buffalo, Indianapolis is maybe the team that I'm most worried about with how they run the ball. And, you know, I don't know that a rematch would be 41-15 like it was in week 11, but I don't think Jonathan Taylor dominating would be super different. So is there, like, let's use the Bills here to kind of reset the AFC. If the season were to end today, Buffalo, New England, Miami, Cincinnati, Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Kansas City are in the playoffs. Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, the Chargers, the Raiders, the Broncos, all still possible. I think if I'm reading out the eliminated and qualified correctly, who are you most worried about in the AFC right now? And where would you place the Bills is the biggest question. And who do you have ahead of them?
Yeah, I'm not fully confident with the Bills yet. I know I just hyped up their win over the Patriots, but, you know, they did lose pretty embarrassingly to them on home field. Then they lost to the Bucks, and they've pulled themselves back up to the top suddenly. But I'm not feeling like that's something that I'm going to sleep well at night. The Dolphins. Like, they're on a 7-game winning streak all out of the blue. Like, I slept on them all year. Didn't even think about them being an issue whatsoever. And they've come out of nowhere, in my opinion, maybe because I'm ignoring them. And obviously the Chiefs. Like, you look at the AFC West, the Chiefs are, they're making me super nervous, especially with just their consistency. They're on an 8-game winning streak. Like, those are massive, massive winning streaks. So those are two teams that I don't like when a team has momentum, but when they have a 7 or 8 game winning streak, it just, you have this level of confidence and this level of swagger that is, it gives you that upper edge. Like, I know the Bills have won 2 now, but that's, although they have the Patriots game as is a big momentum boost, I want to see what they can do the next 2 games.
Look, I'm just going to say this about the Dolphins. I'm not trusting any team that lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah. Well, so shut up about that.
Yeah. The real Josh Allen. Maybe the Jaguars, all they need is to be in the AFC East. And
yeah,
golden.
Maybe.
We have Justin Cuthbert back now. We were just talking about the Bills win over the Patriots and using that to reset the AFC, Justin. Right now, in terms of AFC conference winners, Kansas City at plus 170, the Bills at plus 390, and then you go all the way to plus 700 and higher for the Colts, Patriots, Titans. Do you feel that that's accurate? Does any of that stand out to you as either good value or, hey, the market's gone a little too far on this team?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Kansas City Chiefs are good value at this point, but it's hard to ignore them, right? Like, every other team in the AFC seems to be limping just a touch. I mean, Buffalo's definitely picked it up in recent weeks here and could be worth a look. But the one seed is so valuable now. And at plus 170, you know, you still got to win two games to get to the Super Bowl if you're Kansas City. But at that price, I just don't know where else to go because of the way they're playing, because it doesn't seem like there's an obvious choice. And because, you know, they're going to have all the advantages down the stretch here. I wish I recognized or picked up on this a little bit sooner, but I don't really have a hard lean in the AFC. I am maybe jumping on the bandwagon with the Dallas Cowboys a little bit in the NFC. I think if there is value, it's probably there. But I'm having a real hard time with futures in the NFL right now. I'm just, you know, we talked a little bit about mediocrity in the NFL, or a lot of like good teams, but not many great teams. I'm still having trouble now into week, what we're in 17 now of an 18er, picking out who might be that elite team. And it's all my instincts are telling me to go back to Kansas City because they're performing like the Kansas City that's been to the Super Bowl in back-to-back seasons and won one. So it feels like the value sort of sucked out the current futures market, at least for me.
One thing I don't know about you, Justin, is who's your NFL team?
I'm reluctantly a Vikings fan, but I will say that betting, fantasy, those things have really taken like my fandom out of the equation. Like, it's, you understand you're not really a diehard anymore when you don't want to put them on because you've got money on this team or you've got invested interest in player X scoring a touchdown in a different 4 o'clock game. I do think my fandom for the NFL has died. That's probably a good thing given the state of the Minnesota Vikings.
You're not going to weigh in on the Kirk Cousins is great analytically, but just can't get it done on Monday Night Football debate or I guess not even a debate, just that story.
The problem is that, I mean, Kirk Cousins is not the least of the Vikings concerns, but I almost feel like Mike Zimmer is a bigger issue for the Vikings than Kirk Cousins at this point. I mean, there's a lot, I wouldn't say a lot, but Carson Wentz is having success right now with the Indianapolis Colts. And you know why? Because he's got a good coach in Frank Reich and a good defense and a good team around him. I think Kirk Cousins in the right environment could be palatable. But when you mix Cousins with Zimmer and all the other issues, not to mention the inability to kick field goals, it's just not an equation that's going to work out. And that's probably why I'm out.
So one other way to frame these futures, and something I'm fond of doing to kind of translate these lines into what they mean in terms of expectation, is to convert them to an implied probability, right? It's like this line suggests that they would win this amount of time. So before I give you those, I guess I want to ask both of you, in a year this open in the NFL, where we've talked a lot about so many good teams, not a lot of elite teams, and there's a lot of matchup versus matchup stuff that could happen depending on how the bracket shakes out, what would be the highest percentage confidence level that you would have on any team making the Super Bowl right now? So what I'm saying is, like, do you think there's a 60% chance the Chiefs make the Super Bowl, a 35% chance the Packers make the Super Bowl? What is the highest you'd be willing to go on that, Ailish, for any team?
That is a question that my brain
hasn't turned on enough.
But I like a 40% chance. I think that's fair.
Who would it be for?
Oh, God, the Bills.
It's not the Bills. I'm sorry.
The Chiefs.
Yeah.
The Chiefs.
If the Chiefs are plus 170 to win the AFC, what is the implied probability there?
That's 37%.
Okay, 37%. That's what I'm thinking.
So that's where I was going with that is like, you know, I find it helpful that sometimes to be like, this is especially true with like hockey lines, which are always, you know, because you don't have or you're not betting the spread super often. I like to look at it and be like, okay, like, is this a 50-50 game? Is it a 55-45 game? You know, the odd blowout game, is it 60-40? And then, okay, what line does that suggest? And then you see the value there. So when you see Chiefs at plus 170, that doesn't necessarily feel like great value in this opening year. But then you look and it's like, okay, that's like, you know, a 2 out of 5 chance they're gonna get to the Super Bowl. And assuming they lock up that bye, have they locked it up already? No, they've only clinched the division. Okay, so if they lock that up, and you certainly like their chances to at this point, you know, that's not that crazy a line, I don't think. I think I'm less confident in the Packers at plus 190, which is a 34.5% implied probability. I think there are more threats in the NFC, or maybe not more threats, but just less of a tiering off in the NFC, where you have Green Bay, Tampa Bay, the Rams. I'm with you on Dallas. Justin, I talked about them last week as a team that, you know, JD, when we set it up, he didn't have them in their contender tier. I think they are with their defense and their ability to rush the ball and kind of control the game that way. I'm out on the Cardinals at this point. They've had a couple embarrassing weeks in a row. Ailes, you had a little something else?
Yeah, then I'm just doubling back on my choice. I think my 40%, actually, you just kind of confirmed that that is kind of the right area to be in with if the Chiefs are 37.5, like rounding it up to 40, I think that that's definitely my limit. So my guess at 40%, I just want to give myself a pat on the back as someone that's not a math person. I feel good about that.
Yeah. So the way you would frame this is if you thought there's a 40% chance, like if you ran your model or whatever, you did whatever, and you were like, the Chiefs have a 40% chance of getting to the Super Bowl, you would bet that line up to 150. So it's plus 170 right now. You'd still hit that until it hits plus 150. If you ever hear or read someone saying bet the line to this, that's what it means. It means you're betting that and there's a little bit of wiggle room if the line changes. And then obviously if it goes in the other direction, you would like it more.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably peg it around 50%. So I do think there is a little bit of value there on the Chiefs, but it's not going to be easy. I mean, if things go as I think we expect, I mean, maybe the Bills move up a little bit in the standings here. Maybe they're able to leapfrog the Bengals, who coincidentally have the Chiefs, I believe, this weekend. So there's the opportunity for that. But the first game for the Chiefs is not going to be easy. I mean, right now the Bills and Colts are sort of in that position, and they're going to have to beat two good teams to get to the Super Bowl. So I just don't know where else to go with it, because I do believe the Chiefs are the class and probably at about a 40 to 50% probability of making it to the Super Bowl. It's really tough to pinpoint right now, and I think you have to let things shake out, because you know there's Patriots and Dolphins. If it's them, if the Chargers get in, it's maybe a little bit more complicated, but the bottom is not very strong in terms of the AFC standings at the moment. So wherever these teams shake down in the final standings will go a long way in determining what might be the value side when the playoffs do begin.
So 13 teams in the AFC still not technically eliminated, which, you know, either says there's a ton of good teams or a ton of really mediocre ones. There are 10 teams even right now who are tied for or in a playoff spot, which is this is what the NFL wants, right? They want week 17 and week 18 to be this big, this dramatic, and this important. So the NFL is getting what they want. A better is maybe not getting what they want, because this feels real coin flippy, and you probably feel a different way about it if Miami is the 7 seed versus if the Chargers sneak in and take that spot, and there may be a little more of a threat to, say, knock off a Titans. And then what does the bracket look like from there?
Also the Ravens too. I mean, I would be a little bit worried if the Ravens suddenly got healthy, got into the playoffs, and all of a sudden are hanging around there as a 7 seed. They could maybe give trouble to the Chiefs in a playoff game. They could probably knock off a Titans team or a Bengals team, although the Bengals have had their success against the Ravens this year. I just feel like there's a couple landmines that you got to be careful of, and maybe it's worth watching these 2 weeks play out before you commit too much on what isn't, you know, that the quality of odds maybe not there.
That's the futures consideration. What we don't have the option to wait on is the Wake and Rake parlay picks. Justin, you're tagging in for JD here. So for anyone
very concerned there that I was going to miss it, by the way.
The Wake and Rake parlay is basically each of us picks our favorite line for the night ahead, up to a value of minus 200. If it goes beyond that, it skews into coward's parlay territory. So we're looking for at least a little bit of value to throw in the parlay here. And no futures or anything like that. It's ideally something that's taking, well, it's a Wednesday with no NFL football, so it has to be taking place tonight. We have 9 NBA games, 6 NHL games, 2 World Junior games. Ailish, does anything stand out to you? Oh, did you not expect me to come to you? You know, you're going to have a Wake and Rake parlay every
day. I have many. That's the problem. It's always tough to like some of these NHL games have like low, like there's not a lot of big money line differentiated.
Yeah, coin flip games because
coin flip
teams
games
are.
Yeah, so like I'm staying away from the NHL because like nothing stands out to me as a guarantee tonight, especially with like half the rosters are in COVID protocol. So I'm going to go to the Canada Germany World Juniors game. And of course there's like the money line for Canada to win is just ridiculous. So I'm going to go into the over under Canada goals. Now it's set at 6.5. And I think I'm going to go under 6.5 goals.
Wow.
I don't know. I just feel, now I want to say over. See, this is tough.
No, so don't let me influence.
Over is minus 137 and under is plus 103. So both are like within our range that we're allowed to pick. I think I want to go under. Just give me till the end of this segment to solidify it. But it's going to be one of those, okay?
We will give you until the end of the segment. Justin, what do you have for us?
Based on what Ailish said, I thought you were going to say, okay, let's take Germany out of it and let's go the over on Canadian goals. I might go under the entire game if you think it's going to be a low scoring. Mm. If you're leaning towards Canada, maybe not filling the net, maybe the under on the entire game. But again, don't want to influence anything. I was considering going Clemson -2.5, going really like outside of my
wheelhouse
over Iowa State and whatever bowl it is. Because I still think there's like champ. This team is just they're the national or the football playoff, college football playoff. Like what the last 5 years running? Like they still have some championship residue. You'd got to think, even though it was a difficult season for them, to win a bowl game by more than 3 points. But I'll go with the Washington Capitals on the money line. I think they're like minus 152. They've just been really consistent this year. And I think you're getting decent value there against the Nashville Predators at home. But Washington's just a team that like nothing's really affected them all year. It's been a weird year, obviously, for so many reasons. But Washington just keeps winning hockey games. And it seems like nothing really phases them. So coming back after a long layoff, I feel like Washington is a decent bet under what are abnormal circumstances. So I will officially put in the Washington Capitals as my play here. While I wanted to do Clemson, I think it's probably safer to do Washington.
I'm going to break not a rule, but something you want to be aware of in the NBA. And it's a team on the second night of a back-to-back on the road, especially when they're favored, is a little bit of a bad spot. But Ailish, our New York Knicks look like they've started to turn it around a little bit. And they're playing against a Detroit Pistons team that has 12 players, including Cade Cunningham and Jeremy Grant, their two best players, out for this game. So this is a Raptors-Cavs situation where, at most, unless something changes, like these players aren't listed as questionable. They're listed as out right now. So unless something dramatic changes between now and tip-off at 7 o'clock, the Pistons are going to be running 5 guys plus emergency call-ups against a Knicks team that's turned it around pretty good. The Pistons are not good in the best of times. You take away Cade Cunningham. You take away Jeremy Grant. This is a team that's 5-27 on the season. I just like they just called up Davidas Sarvydis from
who?
The G League. Yeah, so he was a Lithuanian guy who was like his claim to fame last year was like he was probably the worst player in the NBA, and they just called him back up as an emergency recall. Cassius Stanley in the mix there, Derek Walton. These are not named. Jamorco Pickett, who's been on the roster anyway, but you know, is now getting to play. These are not guys that should be playing huge NBA minutes. The Knicks are 6.5-point favorites. Again, that's on the road on the second night of a back-to-back. I don't love it from a value perspective, but this Pistons team has, like, this Pistons team is going to be worse than the one that the Raptors trotted out against the Cavs. So I'm going Knicks -6.5. Ailish, what do you got to lock one in here?
Yep, under. Canada, under 6.5 goals. It's +103. Let's do it.
Okay, so that's just the Canada side, right?
Just Canada, under 6.5 goals. Regulation right, only.
So your wake and rake, Knicks -6.5, Canada under 6.5, and the Washington Capitals outright. We're going to talk a little bit more about that Canada-Germany game, how some of Canada's top prospects have looked, and how some prospects from your Toronto Maple Leafs have looked. We're going to talk all that with Scott Wheeler, the NHL prospects writer at The Athletic, who is out in Edmonton covering the tournament. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.